Today, QE Ahoy, the Property Imperative Weekly to 26th of October 2019. Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our latest post covering property and finance news with a distinctively Australian flavour. In this week's digest, we look at the attempts to support the financial system through more aggressive QE, the trade war mirage, the impact on markets, mostly positive, and the impact on the real economy, mostly negative. And as usual, we start with the international context. But if you want to head directly to the Australian segment, the time is shown below, and we also list the main topics in the comments below. In New York, the S&P 500 rose on Friday, in fact briefly rising above its record closing high, after Washington said that it was close to finalising parts of a trade pact with Beijing, with President Donald Trump saying that China wanted, quote, to make a deal very badly. Plus, we saw more QE from the Fed, not called QE, of course, and the results season remained more positive than expected. Intel, for example, added to Friday's upbeat sentiment, with their shares jumping 8.1% to 56.46, and that added 17.4 points to the NASDAQ 100 after the company beat Wall Street revenue and profit estimates and raised its full-year revenue forecast. Intel's gains outweighed losses in shares of Amazon, which fell after the e-commerce giant forecast revenue and profit for the crucial holiday quarter below estimates. It was the company's first profit decline in 2 years, and Amazon shares closed at 1,761, down 1.09%. Boeing shares dropped 1.5% after Indonesian authorities, looking into the October 2018 Lion Air crash, said the world's largest plane maker failed to grasp risks in the design of cockpit software on its 737 MAX jet. The Dow Jones Industrials finished up 0.57%, 26,955, and ended the day just 1.53% below its all-time high from July. The S&P 500 ended up 0.41% on the day at 3,022.55, and the NASDAQ Composite closed up 0.7% to a new closing high of 8,243, and that is just 1.2% below its all-time intraday peak. The 10-year Treasury yield moves to 1.799, up 1.9%, while the three-month sat at 1.674, so no inversion just now, signalling a more positive outlook and possibly higher rates. Meanwhile, the size on the non-QE QE is rising, with the New York Fed saying this week, consistent with the most recent FOMC directive, to ensure that the supply of reserves remains ample even during periods of sharp increases in non-reserve liabilities, and to mitigate the risk of money market pressures that could adversely affect policy implementation, the amount offered in overnight repo operations will increase to at least $120 billion starting Thursday, October the 24th. The amount offered for the term repo operations scheduled for Thursday the 24th and Tuesday the 29th, which spans the October month end, will increase to at least $45 billion. In other words, the liquidity taps are being opened further. They did not elaborate on the reason for this increase, but this is now supporting more of the financial sector, and we suspect these non-emergency, non-QE, non-monetary policy operations indicate we may have already reached the effective lower bound for the Fed's current balance sheet holding. That said, the Federal Reserve is widely expected to lower interest rates next week for a third time this year, and markets are pricing in a 90% chance of that rate cut at the Federal Reserve's meeting. And US President Donald Trump has pushed for even more rate cuts, pointing to falling interest rates at other central banks around the world. The Federal Reserve is derelict in its duty if it doesn't lower the rate and even ideally stimulate. Take a look around the world at our competitors. Germany and others are actually getting paid to borrow money. The Fed was way too fast to raise and way too slow to cut. the president tweeted. Gold futures was up 0.16% to 1,507, and West Texas Intermediate crude rose 0.76% to 56.66 a barrel. The volatility index was down 7.73% to 12.65. That's a new one-month low. And the euro-US dollar was down 0.22% to 1.1080. The US dollar index futures was up 0.21% at 97.83, and Bitcoin was up 15.37% to 8,612. Elsewhere, the pound dropped as French President Emmanuel Macron blocked the European Union's attempt to delay Brexit for 3 months. That raised the prospect the UK might not know whether it will get an extension until just hours before it is scheduled to be ejected on the 31st of October, even without a deal. The pound US dollar ended at 1.2823, down 0.16% on the day, and the EU may wait until Monday to decide how long a Brexit extension they'll give the UK. Boris Johnson is also pushing for a general election in December. He said that he will give MPs more time to debate if they agree to an election. And UK Labour leader Corbyn, on the other hand, said he would wait to see how much time the EU gives them before deciding on whether to reject or approve Johnson's call for an election. The bottom line is the drama will go on and on and on. Yet, once political uncertainty lifts, people will focus more on the UK's economy, which is weakening. This could be a negative for sterling ahead. The FTSE fell 0.65% to 7,324, and Metro Bank fell 3.34% to 208.6, as Metro Bank's founder has resigned as chairman with immediate effect, weeks before he was expected to step down. The High Street Challenger said Vernon Hill, who founded the bank in 2010, would stay on as a non-executive director until the 31st of December. The announcement was made before the publication of the bank's third quarter results on Wednesday afternoon, and they showed a loss of £6.7 million in the 3 months to September, compared with £900,000 in the second quarter. This was due in part to continuing costs linked to its transformation and remediation programs, which are meant to cut costs and address its accounting error. Metro Bank did not provide comparative figures for 2018, but said it swung to an underlying loss of £2.2 million compared to the £15.1 million profit last year. The bank was also hit by £235 million worth of deposit outflows from large business customers last month after it spooked markets by postponing a crucial bond sale. Over at the ECB, Mario Draghi oversaw his final meeting as the head of the European Central Bank. After serving an 8-year term as one of the world's most influential central bankers, he left investors with a gloomy outlook and warned that low rates are here to stay. The euro sold off in response, dropping briefly below 1.11 in the process. The moderation in services and construction activity, along with weak wages and employment growth, means the downside risks are prominent. The latest PMI reports confirm that activity is subdued in Germany and the Eurozone. Low inflation is also a persistent problem, and with prices likely to decline slightly, further ample monetary accommodation is still needed, they said. As the latest data shows, further weakening of the economy, Draghi called on governments with fiscal space to act because all successful monetary unions have a fiscal capacity. The European Central Bank left monetary policy unchanged on Thursday after unveiling a big stimulus package last month, but there are concerns the ECB's firepower has largely been spent. For his successor, Christine Lagarde, the main risk will be a downturn in the economy. While her first monetary policy meeting won't be until December, the prospect of additional weakness in Eurozone data, particularly in Germany, should keep the currency under pressure. And investors are waiting for evidence of recession. And when they receive it, we could see renewed losses on the euro. A Reuters poll of economists showed that most think a steep decline in global growth is more likely than a synchronized recovery, despite central bank easing. Hi, it's Liz Interruption. But if you're getting value from this post and have not done so, please consider subscribing to this channel or ring the bell for custom alerts. Plus, please consider supporting our efforts. You can make a one-off donation via PayPal, here's the link, or subscribe via Patreon for as little as $3 US a month or more to get access to exclusive additional content. Alternatively, you can also donate using Bitcoin. Here is the QR code. The links are in the comments below. I really appreciate your support, which enables us to continue to make more great content. Thanks very much. Now, back to the current show. And so, to the local markets. Locally, Australia's flash PMI fell, but remains above 50. The manufacturing PMI barely held above 50 at 50.1, and that was down from 50.3. And it's not just manufacturing, as the services slumped to 50.8 from 52.4. The composite eased to 50.7 from 52. Adding to that disappointment, Australia held a T-bill auction that was undersubscribed. The three-month bill auction saw bids for $936 million for a $1 billion offering. And that's the first failed bid auction in nearly two decades. On the other hand, the six-month bill auction was five times oversubscribed. Now the question is, was that failure a bit of a fluke, thanks to technical factors, or is this a sign of more concerns about the local economy? Certainly, the latest from the ABS showed weak household spending, low wages growth, and asset values falling, as we discussed in our recent post, Some Hard Facts About the Australian Economy. An ANZ chief, Shane Elliott, said that while the Australian economy had avoided a technical recession, it sure does feel like one to many of its customers. Does it feel like a recession? It does to a lot of people, Mr. Elliott said on Wednesday. Despite record low official interest rates, he said ANZ's data showed savings from the latest round of official rate cuts were being used to reduce household debt at the expense of consumer spending on cars, restaurants, and at retail outlets. While Mr. Elliott considered it unlikely that Australia would enter an official recession, he told the Arnold Block Labour event that many households feel they have less discretionary income and economic growth is below its potential. Furthermore, the Reserve Bank's official rate cut earlier this month had a limited short-term impact because, unfortunately, the relief from low interest rates is starting to be poured back into housing. Consumers are not spending it on retail or other things. Elsewhere, the House of Reps pushed through the cash transaction limit of $10,000 this week, despite the fact this legislation was already referred to a Senate inquiry. So there is still time to have your say and call them out for simply bad policy. See our post, The Cash Ban Skullduggery. Senate submissions are open until mid-November. And the ABC did a good post on the subject and said the government has faced opposition from some of its own MPs, as well as several lobby groups, including the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry, CPA Australia, and the Institute of Public Affairs. A number of politicians speaking before Parliament on Thursday about the proposed law noted significant community opposition, including fears the laws could restrict freedom and give authorities greater control. The proposed law would apply to all payments made to businesses with an ABN for goods or services affecting major purchases like cars, boats, housing, and building renovations. The government has said the measure would not apply to individual transactions, such as private sales, where the seller does not have an ABN or cash payments to financial institutions. The proposed law also does not currently apply to digital currencies such as Bitcoin. On Thursday, Labour's Shadow Assistant Treasurer Stephen Jones moved an amendment to the bill to include the words that it recognises the importance of cash for conducting transactions around Australia and notes the concerns that have arisen in many parts of the community about the bill. Mr. Jones told ABC News Australians who had any concerns should make submissions to the inquiry being held by the Senate Economics Legislation Committee. Submissions to that inquiry close on November the 15th and it will report back by February the 7th, 2020. So to property. Sales of residential development sites in Australia fell by 38% to $5.1 billion in 2018-19, according to Knight Frank. This decline nationally was driven by Sydney, where site sales fell by 50% and average site values fell by 12%, more than double the decline in Melbourne. The slump from $8.25 billion of sales recorded in fiscal 2018 was led by Greater Sydney, where the value of sales of development sites suitable for high-density projects, 25 or more apartments, and more than four stories, halved. to 1.97 billion out of a state total of $2.7 billion. Driving the 38% fall nationally was reduced demand from overseas investors, especially in Sydney, where they accounted for just 11% of total site sales. Across Sydney, average site values fell 12% to $184,000 per apartment, more than double the fall in Melbourne. And NABRA released their latest property analysis, saying in an environment of stabilising house prices, falling interest rates and an easing in macroprudential safeguards, the survey points to an increasing, albeit still below average, number of investors in both new and established housing markets. That said, tight credit was again called out as the single biggest constraint on new housing development, and access to credit the biggest impediment for buyers of existing property across the country. NAB's view is that prices have bottomed and will rise over the rest of 2019 and through 2020, led by increases in Sydney and Melbourne based on, you guessed it, the CoreLogic data. They say overall they expect house prices to end 2019 1.8% higher in Sydney and 0.7% higher in Melbourne, with mixed outcomes across the other capitals, and they expect moderate growth across the capital cities of 4.5% in 2020. Despite the stabilisation in prices, they expect the activity side of the market to remain weak. Dwelling investment is expected to decline relatively sharply over the next few quarters, though from a high base, and while the pipeline of work to be done remains high, it is likely this will be quickly eroded with high rates of work done. Building approvals have continued to trend down, suggesting little replenishment to the flow of new work. But following a small uptick in activity in the second quarter, the trend decline in the number of foreign buyers in Australian housing markets that started in early 2018 resumed in the third quarter 2019, with their share falling to 5.8% in new property markets, compared with 7.1% in the second quarter, and 3.4% in established markets, compared with 4.1% in the second quarter. In the key markets, the share of sales to foreign buyers in new housing markets fell to 7.3% in Victoria, after jumping to 12.2% in the second quarter, and was well below the average of 13.7%. In New South Wales, the market share fell to an 8.5-year low of just 2%, compared with 7.8% in the second quarter, and was also well below the average of 9.6%. In Queensland, foreign buyers accounted for 7.9% of total sales, compared with 6.8% in the second quarter, but this was well below the survey average of 12.4%, and foreign buyers were more prevalent in the West at 5.8%, having fallen to a survey low of 0.8% in the previous quarter. And CoreLogic reported another big week in terms of auction clearances, with 1,955 auctions listed and 1,238 cleared. Sydney came in at 79.2%, lifting the national average to 72.1%. This compares with 2,139 last year and a 46% clearance. And home prices continue to lift in most markets, though the Sydney number dropped suddenly a couple of days back, and Perth is still falling. And Domain also reported their results, and we discussed this in detail in our post Domain on Australian property prices, with somewhat similar results, but again on low volumes of sales, which may well be distorting the results. Domain says property sales have rebounded in 2019, but are still at low levels. And the Western Australian government announced stamp duty rebates of up to $50,000 for buyers of new apartments under a two-year scheme announced by the state government. The rebate, revealed by Premier Mark McGowan, will be available for 2 years to any purchaser who signs a pre-construction contract to purchase a new residential unit or apartment in a multi-tiered development. There will be no cap on the purchase price, and multiple rebates will be available to the same applicant. Premier Mark McGowan said the initiative would drive investment into the residential construction industry and support the property sector. It's limited to 2 years, and then we'll see how it's tracking. It's designed to get development happening in WA right now. More carrot. But people in the West will be mad to buy now. Such incentives simply distort the market and increase the potential oversupply. More unnatural acts, more price falls ahead. And UBS said this week that the bank reporting season begins on the 31st of October, and they expect another complex set of numbers given divestments, remediation charges and other one-off items in both this half and prior periods. They believe that the second half 19 will be a high water mark for the sector as the outlook deteriorates in an ultra-low rate environment. Dividends remain at risk if interest rates are cut further or if QE is undertaken, so they expect ANZ's dividend policy to be a key debating point given APRA and RBNZ reviews. And they expect Westpac to cut its dividend from 94 to 84 cents per share and offer a discounted DRP. All this helps to explain the latest attempts to revive the interest-only lending sector by the big banks. As Banking Day put it, Westpac is easing restrictions on lending to property investors in an attempt to revive its underperforming mortgage business. The banks have raised the loan-to-value ratio caps on interest-only mortgages from a previous limit of 80%. Under a revised lending policy, Westpac and its regional banking subsidiaries will accept applications from investors seeking loans up to 90% of property values. This brings Westpac into line with its major banking peers CBA and NAB, and NAB also markets interest-only mortgages on 90% LVR terms, but the ceiling extends to 95% on certain loan products. And ANZ announced in March that it was raising LVRs and interest-only investor loans to 90%, but the bank's marketing department is having some difficulty communicating this offer to borrowers. And of course, demand from investors remains low as other lending standards remain tight. Finally, there were reports that the Cabinet, Treasury and the RBA were all looking at QE, which might imply that rate cuts have ended for now. The nature of such an approach was discussed by Westpac this week, who seized the bounds at 50 basis points, so one more cut ahead. And they said, in Australia's current circumstances, given that Australian banks are flush with liquidity, any action from the RBA would be directed at monetary accommodation. The programs were designed to work through a range of channels, potentially. First, by buying assets from any entity, the central bank would increase the level of reserves in the banking system. A direct purchase from a bank would see the central bank expand its balance sheet with a liability of increased bank reserves on one side of the balance sheet and the asset on the other side of its balance sheet. With banks now holding more reserves, the objective would be to see the bank increase lending given the support of higher reserves. Second, by buying the asset, the central bank would put upward pressure on the value of the asset and therefore downward pressure on the interest rate, which may pass through to other assets, including private sector assets, through relative value adjustments and the portfolio rebalancing channel. Third, downward pressure on the yield curve can be expected to weaken the currency to the extent that interest rate impact currencies. In addition, if the seller of assets to the central bank rebalance their portfolios by buying an overseas asset, this will see selling pressure on the local currency. And fourth, the central bank may also choose to purchase a foreign currency asset. This will be done by the central bank crediting the domestic bank's reserve account in exchange for foreign currency. The domestic bank would then sell the local currency to the market in exchange for the foreign currency. And that action should put downward pressure on the local currency. Once the central bank had acquired sufficient foreign currency, it would purchase the foreign currency asset from the market. The result would be that the domestic banking system would hold more domestic banking reserves, boosting the liquidity of the banking system. If the central bank chose to sterilize the reserves, it would then have to exchange domestic securities for reserves with the banking system. However, because the objective was monetary accommodation, it is unlikely that the central bank would choose to sterilize. Under scenarios 1 to 4, the liquidity of the system is boosted by the central bank's actions to expand its balance sheet and lift the bank's holdings of reserves. And under 1 to 3, the transmission mechanism is through lowering the interest rate on the asset, which may also impact the currency. Arguably, an announcement from the central bank that is was purchasing domestic assets would put downward pressure on the currency. And under 4, the transmission mechanism is directly targeted at the currency, as the domestic banks sell the currency to fulfill the order from the central bank. The impact would be even stronger if the market signaled the actions of the central bank. The question then becomes one of whether the stimulatory impact on the economy is greater using the reserves channel, lower domestic rates, and some uncertain currency effect, or simply the reserves effect and the more direct currency effect. This is just one big experiment, but it allows the government to retain its surplus for now and avoids the obvious spending that the economy needs. And finally, a quick look at the local market. The ASX 100 ended 0.71% higher on Friday at 5,591.90. The local volatility index dropped 5.93% to 11.46, while the financials index was up 0.51% to 6,445. All the majors were up around 0.5% on Friday. The Aussie was a little stronger at 68.23, though fell slightly against the euro at 1.6240, down 0.22%. The Aussie gold cross was at 2,205.7, and the Aussie Bitcoin cross was up 12.59% to 12,589. So the magic of QE is being considered to save the economy, yet experience around the world is that this is just not working. Look at the Fed, the ECB, and Japan. And remember, this is at a time when, according to our leaders, the economy is just fine. And of course, if a financial crisis comes later, as many expect, we will be ill-prepared to handle the fallout. Bad economic management over two decades is coming home to roost. And now tell me again, why is this now a good time to buy property? Because, frankly, I just do not see it. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.